Hey guys, it's reading day, and the book we're reading is Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus by Mary Shelley. We'll be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks, find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Hey everybody, how's everybody doing today? Welcome, welcome, welcome. See, I finally figured out how to like get these intros going on here. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour or so. I'm also the owner of the California Haunted Paranormal Investigation Team, based out of Sacramento, California. We are 45 strong up and down the state, which means if you think you have a paranormal issue, we can help you. It might take us a while to get to you, but we definitely can help you. In the case that we can't get to you right away, we do have mediums on staff who can phone you and talk to you about what may or may not be going on in your place. And if it is paranormal, in most cases, this they can settle this stuff down. Okay, that being said, if you're watching from Facebook today, and a lot of you are, please be sure to hit those like buttons, hit that follow button if you haven't done so already. And again, if you like what you hear and see today, because what we're going to be doing is reading a book today. If you like what you hear and see today, then please hit that like button. Give me some thumbs up. Same thing with YouTube. You know, if you're watching from YouTube today and you haven't subscribed already, please feel free to do so. I gotta get something going here really quick before I forget my banner. Please feel free to do so. And YouTube, there's over 1,000 videos over there, all of this show, and we're real proud of that. But it's, you know, like I said, if you like what you see, please subscribe if you haven't done so already, and show me some love, give me a thumbs up and things like that. Same thing with Twitch, okay? All right. Well, today, of course, it's Sunday, and today is the day, the people that might be listening that haven't heard the show before, today is the day that I read from a paranormal-themed book. Sometimes the books are real, sometimes, you know, real cases, sometimes they're not, like tonight's book. But they're really good, you know, classic hauntings and things like that. So I'm going to be reading from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. I know the title's different, but it's easier to say Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. So I'm going to read for about an hour. Hopefully get through. Last week we got through 4 chapters because they were really short. So we'll see how many chapters we get through, but I'm going to try and make it for at least an hour to read through tonight, okay? So you don't have anything to do. You know, some people clean house, put me in their pocket, and walk around. I'm good. I'm cool with that. Some water. Wet my missile. So I'm cool with that. But otherwise, you know, have a seat on your couch or whatever and prop your feet up. Maybe you have dinner. And like it says, popcorn and snacks and all that. And, coming in, but hot cider now, not hot cocoa. It'll be hot cocoa soon. Be hot cocoa before you know it. Okay, so here we go. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and we are at chapter 16, and we're at 6:11. And so I'll read till about 7:11. As we saw our monster last week, he has become very articulate. He's been living on his own, living in the back of a cottage where nobody could see him. And he fell in love with the family that was living there. And so he decided to make himself known. And, of course, they were all repulsed by him, so he had to run away. So this is where we're at right now. Okay? So here we go, chapter 16, and away we go. I got to get comfortable, too. This chair sucks. My chair is horrible. Okay, curse, creator. Why did I live? Why, in that instant, did I not extinguish the spark of existence which you had so wantonly bestowed? I know not. Despair had not yet taken possession of me. My feelings were those of rage and revenge. I could with pleasure have destroyed the cottage and its inhabitants and have glutted myself with their shrieks and misery. When the night came, I quitted my retreat and wandered into the woods, and now, no longer restrained by the fear of discovery, I gave vent to my own anguish and fearful howlings. I was like a wild beast that had broken the toils, destroying the objects that obstructed me and ranging through the wood with a stag-like swiftness. Oh, what a miserable night I passed. The cold stars shone in mockery, and the bare trees waved their branches above me. Now and then, the sweet voice of a bird burst forth amidst the universal stillness. All, save I, were at rest or in enjoyment. I, like the arch fiend, bore a hell within me, and finding myself unsympathized with, wished to tear up the trees, spread havoc and destruction around me, and then to have sat down and enjoyed them, the ruin. But this was a luxury of sensation that could not endure. I became fatigued with excess of bodily exertion, and sank on the deep, on the damp grass in the sycamore potence of despair. There was none among the myriads of men that existed who would pity or assist me. And should I feel kindness towards my enemies? No. From that moment, I declared everlasting war against the species, and more than all, against him who had formed me and sent me forth to this insufferable world. The sun rose. I heard the voices of men and knew that it was impossible to return to my retreat during that day. Accordingly, I hid myself in some thick underwood, determining to devote the ensuing hours to reflection on my situation. The pleasant sunshine and the pure air of day restored me to some degree of tranquility, and when I considered what had passed at the cottage, I could not help believing that I had been too hasty in my conclusions. I had certainly acted imprudently. It was apparent that my conversation had interested the father in my behalf, and I was a fool in having exposed my person to the horror of his children. I ought to have familiarized the old De Lacy to me, and by degrees to have discovered myself to the rest of his family, when they should have been prepared for my approach. But I did not believe my errors to be irretrievable, and after much consideration, I resolved to return to the cottage, seek out the old man, and by my representations with him to my party. These thoughts calmed me, and in the afternoon I sank into a profound sleep, but the fever of my blood did not allow me to be visited by peaceful dreams. The horrible scene of the preceding day was forever acting before my eyes. The females were flying, and the enraged Felix tearing me from his father's feet. I awoke exhausted, and finding that it was already night, I crept forth from my hiding place and went in search of food. When my hunger was appeased, I directed my steps towards the well-known path that conducted to the cottage, and there was at peace. I crept into my hovel and remained in silent expectation of the accustomed hour when the family arose. That hour passed. The sun mounted high in the heavens, but the cottagers did not appear. I trembled violently, apprehending some dreadful misfortune. The inside of the cottage was dark, and I heard no motion. I cannot describe the agony of this suspense. Presently, two countrymen passed by, but pausing near the cottage, they entered into conversation, using violent gesticulations, but I did not understand what they said, as they spoke the language of the country, which differed from that of my protectors. Soon after, however, Felix approached with another man. I was surprised, as I knew that he had not quitted the cottage that morning and waited anxiously to discover from his discourse the meaning of these unusual appearances. "Do you consider," said his companion to him, "that you will be obliged to pay 3 months' rent and to lose the produce of your garden? I do not wish to take any unfair advantage, and I beg, therefore, that you will take some days to consider of your determination." "It is utterly useless," replied Felix. "We can never again inhabit your cottage. The life of my father is in the greatest danger, owing to the dreadful circumstance that I have related. My wife and my sister will never recover from their horror. I entreat you not to reason with me any more. Take possession of your tenement and let me fly from this place." Felix trembled violently as he said this. He and his companion entered the cottage, in which they remained for a few minutes, and then departed. I never saw any of the family again. I continued for the remainder of the day in my hovel in a state of utter and stupid despair. My protectors had departed and had broken the only link that held me to the world. For the first time, the feelings of revenge and hatred filled my bosom. I did not strive to control them, but allowing myself to be borne away by the stream. I bent my mind towards injury and death. when I thought of my friends, of the mild voice of De Lacy, the gentle eyes of Agatha, and the exquisite beauty of the Arabian, these thoughts vanished, and a gush of tears somewhat soothed me. But again, when I reflected that they had spurned and deserted me, anger returned, a rage of anger, and not able to injure anything human, I turned my fury towards inanimate objects. As night advanced, I placed a variety of combustibles around the cottage, and after having destroyed every vestige of cultivation in the garden, I waited with forced impatience until the moon had sunk to commence my operations. As the night advanced, a fierce wind arose from the woods and quickly dispersed the clouds that had loitered in the heavens. The blast tore along like a mighty avalanche and produced a kind of insanity in my spirits that burst all bounds of reason and reflection. I lighted the dry branch of a tree and danced with fury around the devoted cottage, my eyes still fixed on the western horizon, the edge of which the moon nearly touched. A part of its orb was at length hid, and I waved my brand. It sank, and with a loud scream I fired the straw and heath and bushes, which I had collected. The wind fanned the fire, and the cottage was quickly enveloped by the flames, which clung to it and licked it with their forked and destroying tongues. As soon as I was convinced that no assistance could save any part of the habitation, I quitted the scene and sought for refuge in the woods. And now, with the world before me, whither should I bend my steps? I resolved to fly far from the scene of my misfortunes, but to me, hated and despised, every country must be equally horrible. At length, the thought of you crossed my mind. I learned from your papers that you were my father, my creator, and to whom could I apply with more fitness than to him who had given me life? Among the lessons that Felix had bestowed upon Safi, geography had not been omitted. I had learned from these the relative situations of the different countries of the earth. You had mentioned Geneva as the name of your native town, and towards this place I resolved to proceed. But how was I to direct myself? I knew that I must travel in a southwesterly direction to reach my destination, but the sun was my only guide. I did not know the names of the towns that I was to pass through, nor could I ask information from a single human being. But I did not despair. From you only could I hope for succor, although towards you I felt no sentiment but that of hatred. Unfeeling, heartless creator, you had endowed me with perceptions and passions, and then cast me abroad an object for the scorn and horror of mankind. But on you only had I any claim for pity and redress, and from you I determined to seek that justice which I vainly attempted to gain from any other being that wore the human form. My travels were long, and the sufferings I endured intense. It was late in autumn when I quitted the district where I had so long resided. I traveled only at night, fearful of encountering the visage of a human being. Nature decayed around me, and the sun became heatless. Rain and snow poured around me, mighty rivers were frozen, the surface of the earth was hard and chill and bare, and I found no shelter. Oh, earth, how often did I imprecate curses on the cause of my being? The mildness of my nature had fled, and all within me was turned to gall and bitterness. The nearer I approached to your habitation, the more deeply did I feel the spirit of revenge enkindled in my heart. Snow fell, and the waters were hardened, but I rested not. A few incidents now and then directed me, and I posted a map of the country, and I possessed a map of the country, but I often wandered wide from my path. The agony of my feelings allowed me no respite. No incident occurred for which my rage and misery could not extract this food, but a circumstance that happened when I arrived on the confines of Switzerland, when the sun had recovered its warmth and the earth again began to look green, confirmed in an especial manner the bitterness and horror of my feelings. I generally rested during the day and traveled only when I was secure at night from the view of man. One morning, however, finding that my path lay through a deep wood, I ventured to continue my journey after the sun had risen. The day, which was one of the first of spring, cheered even me by the loveliness of the sunshine and the balminess of the air. I felt emotions of gentleness and pleasure that had long appeared dead. Half surprised by the novelty of these sensations, I allowed myself to be borne away by them, and forgetting my solitude and deformity, dared to be happy. Soft tears again bedewed my cheeks, and I even raised my humid eyes with thankfulness towards the blessed sun, which bestowed such joy upon me. I continued to wind among the paths of wood until I came to its boundary, which was skirted by a deep and rapid river, into which many of the trees bent their branches, now budding with the fresh spring. Here I paused, not exactly knowing what path to pursue, when I heard the sound of voices that induced me to conceal myself under the shade of a cypress. I was scarcely hid when a young girl came running towards the spot where I was concealed, laughing, as if she ran from someone in sport. She continued her course along the sides of the river, when suddenly her foot slipped, and she fell into the rapid stream. I rushed from my hiding place, and with extreme labor from the force of the current, saved her and dragged her to the shore. She was senseless, and I endeavored by every means in my power to restore animation, when I was suddenly interrupted by the approach of a rustic, who was probably the person from whom she had been playing. On seeing me, he darted towards me, and tearing the girl from my arms, hastened towards the deeper parts of the wood. I followed speedily. I hardly knew why, but when the man saw me draw near, he aimed a gun, which he carried, at my body and fired. I sank to the ground, and my injurer, with increased swiftness, escaped into the woods. This was then the reward of my benevolence. I had saved a human being from destruction, and as a recompense, I now writhed under the miserable pain of a wound which shattered the flesh and bone. The feelings of kindness and gentleness which I had entertained but a few moments before gave place to hellish rage and gnashing of teeth. Inflamed by pain, I vowed eternal hatred and vengeance to all mankind. But the agony of my wound overcame me, and my pulses paused, and I fainted. For some weeks, I led a miserable life in the woods, endeavoring to cure the wound which I had received. The ball had entered my shoulder, and I knew not whether it had remained there or passed through. I had no means of extracting it. My sufferings were augmented also by the oppressive sense of the injustice and ingratitude of their affliction. My daily vows rose for revenge, a deep and deadly revenge, such as would alone compensate for the outrages and anguish I had endured. After some weeks, my wound healed, and I continued my journey. The labors I endured were no longer to be alleviated by the bright sun or gentle breezes of spring. All joy was but a mockery, which insulted my desolate state and made me feel more painfully that I was not made for the enjoyment of pleasure. But my toils now drew me near a close, and in 2 months from this time, I reached the environs of Geneva. It was evening when I arrived, and I retired to a hiding place among the fields that surrounded it to meditate in what manner I should apply to you. I was oppressed by fatigue and hunger, and far too unhappy to enjoy the gentle breezes of evening or the prospect of the sun setting behind the stupendous mountains of Jura. At this time, a slight sleep relieved me from the pain of reflection, which was disturbed by the approach of a beautiful child, who came running into the recess I had chosen, and with all the supportiveness of infancy. Suddenly, as I gazed on him, an idea seized me that this little creature was unprejudiced, and had lived too short a time to have imbibed a horror of deformity. If, therefore, I could seize him and educate him as my companion and friend, I should not be so desperate in this peopled earth. Urged by this impulse, I seized on the boy as he passed and drew him towards me. As soon as he beheld my form, he placed his hands before his eyes and uttered a shrill scream. I drew his hand forcibly from his face and said, "Child, what is the meaning of this? I do not intend to hurt you. Listen to me." He struggled violently. "Let me go," he cried. "Monster, ugly wretch, you wish to eat me and tear me to pieces. You are an ogre, Let me go, or I will tell my papa. Boy, you will never see your father again. You must come with me. Hideous monster, let me go. My papa is a sinner. He is M. Frankenstein. He will punish you. You dare not keep me. Frankenstein, you belong then to my enemy. To him? Towards whom? I have sworn eternal revenge. You shall be my first victim. The child still struggled and loaded me with the epitaph which carried despair to my heart. I grasped his throat to silence him, and in a moment, I unalived him. I gazed on my victim, and my heart swelled with exultation and hellish triumph. Clapping my hands, I exclaimed, I too can create desolation. My enemy is not invulnerable. This death will carry despair to him, and a thousand other miseries shall torment and destroy him. As I fixed my eyes on the child, I saw something glittering on his breast. I took it. It was a portrait of a most lovely woman. In spite of my situation, it softened and attracted me. For a few moments, I gazed with delight on her dark eyes, fringed by deep lashes, and her lovely lips. But presently, my rays returned. I remembered that I was forever deprived of the delights that such beautiful creatures could bestow, and that she, whose resemblance I contemplated, would, in regarding me, have changed that air of divine to one of expressive of disgust and affright. Can you wonder that such thoughts transported me with rage? I only wonder that, at that moment, instead of venting my sensations in exclamations and agony, I did not rush among mankind and perish in the attempt to destroy them. While I was overcome by these feelings, I left the spot where I had committed the crime, and seeking a more secluded hiding place, I entered a barn which it appeared to me to be empty. A woman was sleeping on some straw. She was young, not indeed so beautiful as her whose portrait I held, but of an agreeable aspect and blooming in the loveliness of youth and health. Here, I thought, is one of those joy-imparting smiles. Are bestowed upon all but me. And then I bent over her and whispered, Awake, fairest, thy lover is near. He who would give his life but to obtain one look of affection from thine eyes, my beloved, awake. The sleeper stirred. A thrill of terror ran through me. Should she indeed awake and see me and curse me and denounce me as a murderer? Thus would she assuredly act if her darkened eyes opened and she beheld me. The thought was madness. It stirred the fiend within me. Not I, but she shall suffer the murder I have committed but she has suffered the murder I committed because I am so having issues here. My eyes are blurring in and out here. Okay, let's try this. Not I, but she shall suffer the murder I have committed because I am forever robbed of all that she could give me. She shall atone. The crime had its source in her. Be hers the punishment. Thanks to the lessons of Felix and the laws of man, I had learned now to work at mischief. I bent over her and placed the portrait securely in one of the folds of her dress. She moved again, and I fled. For some days, I haunted the spot where these scenes had taken place, sometimes wishing to see you, sometimes resolved to quit the world and its miseries forever. At length, I wandered towards these mountains and have ranged through their immense recesses, consumed by a burning passion which you alone can gratify. We may not part until you have promised to comply with my requisition. I am alone and miserable. Man will not associate with me, but one as deformed and horrible as myself would not deny herself to me. My companion must be of the same species and have the same defects. This being you must create. Chapter 17. So this is where the bride comes in, right? The Bride of Frankenstein. Let me grab a water here. Yeah, my eyes are really dry today, so they're kind of blurring in and out, so I'm doing the best I can. So let me just do this real quick. Okay, I guess we get to meet the bride at some point here. All right, here we go. Continue. Cuddle on up, folks. Here we go. The being finished speaking and fixed his looks upon me in the expectation of a reply. But I was bewildered, perplexed, and unable to arrange my ideas sufficiently to understand the full extent of his proposition. He continued, "You must create a female for me with whom I can live in the interchange of those sympathies necessary for my being. This you alone can do, and I demand it of you as a right, which you must not refuse to concede." The latter part of his tale had kindled anew in me the anger that had died away while he narrated his peaceful life among the cottagers, and as he said this, I could no longer suppress the rage that burned within me. "I do refuse it," I replied, "and no torture shall ever extort a consent from me. You may render me the most miserable of men, but you shall never make me base in my own eyes. Shall I create another like yourself, whose joint wickedness might desolate the world? Be gone. I have answered you. You may torture me, but I will never consent." "You are in the wrong," replied the fiend, "and instead of threatening, I am content to reason with you. I am malicious because I am miserable. Am I not shunned and hated by all mankind? You, my creator, would tear me to pieces and triumph. Remember that, and tell me why I should pity man more than he pities me. You would not call it murder if you could precipitate me into one of those ice rifts and destroy my frame, the work of your own hands, that's for sure. Shall I respect man when he condemns me? Let him live with me in the interchange of kindness, and instead of injury, I would bestow every benefit upon him with tears of gratitude and his acceptance. But that cannot be. The human senses are insurmountable barriers to our union, yet mine shall not be the submission of abject slavery. I will revenge my injuries if I cannot inspire love. I will cause fear, and chiefly towards you, my archenemy, because you are my creator. Do I swear inextinguishable hatred? Have a care. I will work at your destruction, nor finish until I desolate your heart, so that you shall curse the hour of your birth." A fiendish rage animated his face as he said this. His face was wrinkled and in contortions too horrible for human eyes to behold. But presently he calmed himself and proceeded. "I intended to reason. This passion is determined to me for you not to reflect that you are the cause of this excess. If any being felt emotions of benevolence towards me, I should return them 100 and 100-fold. For that one creature's sake, I would make peace with the whole kind. But I now indulge in my dreams a bliss that cannot be realized. What I ask of you is reasonable and moderate. I demand a creature of another sex, but as hideous as myself, the gratification is small, but it is all that I can receive, and it shall content me. It is true, we shall be monsters cut off from all the world, but on that account we shall be more attached to one another. Our lives will not be happy, but they will be harmless and free from the misery I now feel. Oh, my creator, make me happy. Let me feel gratitude towards you for one benefit. Let me see that I excite the sympathy of some existing thing. Do not deny me my request." I was moved. I shuddered when I thought of the possible consequences of my consent, but I felt that there was some justice in his argument. His tale and the feelings he now expressed proved him to be a creature of fine sensations, and did I not, as his maker, owe him all that portion of happiness that it was in my power to bestow? He saw my change of feeling and continued, "If you consent, neither you nor any other human being shall ever see us again. I will go to the vast wilds of South America. My food is not that of a man. I do not destroy the lamb and the kid to glut my appetite. Acorns and berries afford me sufficient nourishment. My companion will be of the same nature as myself and will be content with the same fare. We shall make our bed of dried leaves. The sun will shine on us as one man, and we'll reckon our food. The picture I present to you is peaceful and human, and you must feel that you could deny it only in the wantonness of power and cruelty. Pitiless as you have been towards me, I now see compassion in your eyes. Let me seize the favorable moment and persuade you to promise what I so ardently desire." "You propose," replied I, "to fly from the habitations of man to dwell in those wilds where the beasts of the field will be your only companions. How can you, who long for the love and sympathy of man, preserve in this exile? You will return and again seek their kindness, and you will meet with their detestation. Your evil passions will be renewed, and you will then have a companion to aid you in the task of destruction. This may not be. Cease to argue the point, for I cannot consent. How inconstant are your feelings! But a moment ago you were moved by my representations, and why do you again harden yourself to my complaints? I swear to you, by the earth which I inhabit, and by you that made me, that with the companion you bestow, I will quit the neighborhood of man and dwell, as it may chance, in the most savage of places. My evil passions will have fled, for I shall meet with sympathy. My life will flow quietly away, and in my dying moments I shall not curse my Maker." His words had a strange effect upon me. I compassionated him, and sometimes felt a wish to console him. But when I looked upon him, when I saw the filthy mass that moved and talked, my heart sickened, and my feelings were altered to those of horror and hatred. I tried to stifle these sensations. I thought that as I could not sympathize with him, I had no right to withhold from him a small portion of happiness which was yet in my power to bestow. "You swear," I said, "to be harmless, but have you not already shown a degree of malice that should reasonably make me distrust you? May not even this be a freight that will increase your triumph by affording a wider scope from your revenge? How is this? I must not be trifled with, and I demand an answer. If I have no ties and no affections, hatred and vice must be my portion. The love of another will destroy the cause of my crimes, and I shall become a thing of whose existence everyone will be ignorant. My vices are the children of a forced solitude that I abhor, and my virtues will necessarily arise when I live in communion with an equal. I shall feel the affections of a sensitive being and become linked to the chain of existence and events which I am now excluded." I paused for some time to reflect on all he had related and the various arguments which he had employed. I thought of the promise of virtues which he had displayed on the opening of his existence, and the subsequent blight of all the kindly feeling by the loathing and scorn of his protectors had manifested towards him. His power and threats were not omitted in my calculations. A creature who could exist in the ice caves of the glaciers and hide himself from pursuit among the ridges of the inaccessible precipices was a being possessing faculties it would be vain to cope with. After a long pause of reflection, I concluded that the justice due both to him and my fellow creatures demanded of me that I should comply with his request. Turning to him, therefore, I said, "I consent to your demand, on your solemn oath, to quit Europe forever, and every other place in the neighborhood of man, as soon as I shall deliver into your hands a female who will accompany you in your exile." "I swear," he cried, "by the sun and by the blue sky of heaven and by the fire of love that burns in my heart, that if you grant my prayer while they exist, you shall never behold me again. Depart to your home and commence your labors. I shall watch their progress with unutterable anxiety and fear, but not that when you're ready I shall appear." Saying this, he suddenly quitted me, fearful perhaps of any change in my sentiments. I saw him descend into the mountain with greater speed than that than the flight of an eagle, and quickly lost among the undulations of a sea of ice. His tail had occupied the whole day, and the sun was upon the verge of horizon when he departed. I knew that I ought to hasten my descent towards the valley, as I should soon be encompassed in darkness. But my heart was heavy and my steps slow. The labor of winding among the little paths and the mountain and fixing my feet firmly as I advanced perplexed me, occupied me, as I was by the emotions which the occurrences of the day had produced. Night was far advanced when I came to the halfway resting place and seated myself beside the fountain. The stars shone at intervals as the clouds passed from over them. The dark pines rose before me, and every here and there A broken tree lay on the ground. It was a scene of wonderful quietness and stirred strange thoughts within me. I wept bitterly and clasping my hands in agony. I exclaimed, "Oh, stars and clouds and winds, you're all about to mock me. If you really pity me, crush sensation and memory. Let me become as naught. But if not, depart, depart, and leave me in darkness." These were wild and miserable thoughts, but I cannot describe to you how the eternal twinkling of the stars weighed upon me, and how I listened to every blast of wind, as if it were a dull, ugly siroc on its way to consume me. Morning dawned before I arrived at the village of Chamonix. I took no rest, but returned immediately to Geneva. Even in my own heart, I could give no expression to my sensations. They weighed on me with a mountain's weight, and their excess destroyed my agony beneath them. Thus I returned home, and entering the house, presented myself to the family. My haggard and wild appearance awoke intense alarm, but I answered no questions, scarcely did I speak. I felt as if I were placed under a ban, as if I had no right to claim their sympathies, as if never more might I enjoy companionship with them. Yet, even thus, I loved them to adoration, and to save them, I resolved to dedicate myself to my most abhorred task. The prospect of such an occupation made every other circumstance of existence pass before me like a dream, and that thought only had to me the reality of life. All right, we're moving on to chapter. It is, yeah, we're moving on to chapter 18. Day after day, week after week passed on my return to Geneva, and I could not collect the courage to recommence my work. I feared the vengeance of the disappointed friend, yet I was unable to overcome my repugnance to the task which was enjoined me. I found that I could not compose a female without again devoting several months to profound study and laborious disquisition. I had heard of some discoveries having been made by an English philosopher, the knowledge of which was material to my success, and I sometimes thought of obtaining my father's consent to visit England for this purpose. But I clung to every pretense of delay and shrank from taking the first step in an undertaking whose immediate necessity began to appear less absolute to me. A change indeed had taken place in me. My health, which had hitherto declined, was now much restored, and my spirits, when unchecked by the memory of my unhappy promise, rose proportionally. My father saw this change with pleasure, and he turned his thoughts towards the best method of eradicating the remains of my melancholy, which every now and then would return by fits and with devouring blackness overcast the approaching sunshine. At these moments, I took refuge in the most perfect solitude. I passed whole days on the lake alone in a little boat, watching the clouds and listening to the rippling of the waves, silent and listless. But the fresh air and bright sun seldom failed to restore me to some degree of composure, and on my return, I met the salutations of my friends with a reader smile, with a readier smile and a more cheerful heart. It was after my return from one of these rambles that my father, calling me aside, thus addressed me. "Hello, Pamela. I am happy to remark, my dear son, that you have resumed your former pleasures and seem to be returning to yourself. And yet, you are still unhappy and still avoid our society." For some time, I was lost in conjecture as to the cause of this. But yesterday, an idea struck me, and if it is well-founded, I conjure you to avow it. Reserve on such a point would be not only useless, but draw down troubled misery on us all. I trembled violently at his words, and my father continued, "I confess, my son, that I have always looked forward to your marriage with our dear Elizabeth as the tie of our domestic comfort and the stay of my declining health. You were attached to each other from your earliest infancy. You studied together, and you appeared in dispositions and tastes entirely suited to one another. But so blind is the experience of man that what I conceived to be the best assistance to my plan may have entirely destroyed it. You, perhaps, regard her as your sister, without any wish that she might become your wife. Nay, you may have met with another whom you may love, and considering yourself as bound in honor to Elizabeth, this struggle may occasion to the poignant misery which you appear to feel. My dear father, reassure yourself, I love my cousin tenderly and sincerely. I never saw any woman who excited me, as Elizabeth does. My warmest admiration and affection. My future hopes and prospects are entirely bound up in the expectation of our union. The expression of your sentiments on the subject, my dear Victor, gives me more pleasure than I have for some time experienced. If you feel thus, we shall assuredly be happy. However, present events may cast a gloom over us, but it is this gloom which appears to have taken so strong a hold on your mind that I wish to dissipate. Tell me, therefore, whether you object to an immediate marriage. We have been unfortunate, and recent events have drawn us from that everyday tranquility befitting my years and infirmities. You are younger, yet I do not suppose possessed of you are of a couple are of like nah. See, I told you my eyes are doing weird things. I do not suppose, possessed as you are of competent fortune, that an early marriage would at all interfere with my future plans of honor and utility that you may have formed. Do not suppose, however, that I wish to dictate happiness to you, dictate happiness to you, or that a delay on your part would cause me any serious uneasiness. Interpret my words with candor, and answer me. I conjure you with confidence and sincerity. I listen to my father with silence, and remain for some time incapable of offering any reply. I revolve rapidly in my mind and multitude of thoughts and endeavor to arrive at some conclusion. Alas, to me the idea of an immediate union with my Elizabeth was one of horror and dismay. I was bound by a solemn promise which I had not yet fulfilled and dared not break, or if I did, what manifold miseries might not impend over me and my devoted family. Could I enter into a festival with this deadly weight yet hanging around my neck and bowing me to the ground? I must perform my engagement and let the monster depart with his mate before I allowed myself to enjoy the delight of a union from which I expected peace. I remembered also the necessity imposed upon me of either journeying to England or entering into a long correspondence with those philosophers of that country whose knowledge and discoveries were of indispensable use to me in my present undertaking. The latter method of obtaining the desired intelligence was dilatory and unsatisfactory. Besides, I had an insurmountable aversion to the idea of engaging myself in my loathsome task in my father's house while in habits of familiar intercourse with those I loved. I knew that 1,000 fearful accidents might occur, the slightest of which would disclose a tale to thrill all connected with me with horror. I was aware that I should often lose all self-command, all capacity of hiding the harrowing sensations that would possess me during the progress of my unearthly occupation. I must absent myself from all I loved while thus employed. Once commenced, it would quickly be achieved, and I might be restored to my family in peace and happiness. My promise fulfilled, the monster would depart forever, or so my fond fancy imagined. Some accident might meanwhile occur and destroy him and put an end to my slavery forever. These feelings dictated my answer to my father. I expressed a wish to visit England, but concealing the true reasons of this request, I clothed my desires under a guise which excited no suspicion, while I urged my desire with an earnestness that easily induced my father to comply. After so long a period of an absorbing melancholy that resembled madness in its intensity and effect, he was glad to find that I was capable of taking pleasure in the idea of such a journey, and he hoped that the change of scene and varied amusement would, before my return, have restored me entirely to myself. The duration of my absence was left to my own choice. A few months, or almost a year, was the period contemplated. One paternal kind of precaution he had taken to ensure me having my companion. Without previously communicating with me, he had, in concert with Elizabeth, arranged that Clerval should join me at Strasbourg. This was interfered with the solitude I coveted for the prosecution of my task. Yet, at the commencement of my journey, the presence of my friend could in no way be an impediment, and truly I rejoiced that thus I should be saved many hours of lonely, maddening reflection. Nay, Henry might stand between me and the intrusion of my foe. If I were alone, would he not, at times, force his abhorred presence on me to remind me of my task or to contemplate its progress? To England, therefore, I was bound, and it was understood that my union with Elizabeth should take place immediately upon my return. My father's age rendered him extremely averse to delay. For myself, there was one reward I promised myself for my detested toils, one consolation for my unparalleled sufferings. It was the prospect of that day when, enfranchised from my miserable slavery, I might claim Elizabeth and forget the past in my union with her. I now made arrangements for my journey, but one feeling haunted me, which filled me with fear and hesitation. During my absence, I should leave my friends, unconscious of the existence of their enemy, and unprotected from his attacks. Exasperated as he might be, my departure, right? But he had promised to follow me wherever I go. And would he not accompany me to England? This imagination was dreadful in itself. But soothing, inasmuch as it supposed the safety of my friends, I was agonized with the idea of the possibility that the reverse of this might happen. But through the whole period during which I was a slave of my creature, I allowed myself to be governed by the impulses of the moment, and my present sensations strongly intimated that the friend would follow me and exempt my family from the danger of his furies. It was in the latter end of September that I again quitted my native country. My journey had been my own suggestion, and Elizabeth therefore agreed. But she was filled with disquiet at the idea of my suffering away from her, the inroads of misery and grief. It had been her care which provided me with a companion in Clerval, and yet a man is blind to a thousand minute circumstances which call forth a woman's attention. She longed to bid me hasten my return. A thousand conflicting emotions rendered her mute as she bade me a tearful, silent farewell. I threw myself into the carriage that was to convey me away, hardly knowing whither I was going, and careless of what was passing around. I remembered only that it was with a bitter anguish that I reflected on it, to order that my chemical instruments should be packed to go with me. Filled with dreary imaginations, I passed through many beautiful and majestic scenes, but my eyes were fixed and unobserving. I could only think of the bourne of my travels and the work which was to occupy me whilst they endured. After some days spent in listless indolence, during which I traversed many leagues, I arrived at Strasbourg, where I waited 2 days for Clerval. He came, alas, how great was the contrast between us. He was alive to every new scene, joyful when he saw the beauties of the setting sun, and more happy when he beheld it rise and recommence a new day. He pointed out to me that the shifting colors of the landscape and the appearances of the sky. "This is what it is to live," he cried. "Now I enjoy existence. But you, my dear Frankenstein, wherefore are you desponding and sorrowful?" In truth, I was occupied by gloomy thoughts, and neither saw the descent of the evening star, nor the golden sun rays reflected in the Rhine. And you, my friend, would be far more amused with the journal of Clerval, who observed the scenery with an eye of feeling and delight, than in listening to my reflections, I'm sorry. I am a miserable wretch, haunted by a curse that shut up every avenue to enjoyment. We had agreed to descend the Rhine in a boat from Strasbourg to Rotterdam, which we might take shipping for London. During this voyage, we passed many willow-weed islands and saw several beautiful towns. We stayed a day at Mannheim, and on the 5th from our departure from Strasbourg, arrived at Mainz. The course of the Rhine below the Mainz becomes much more picturesque. The river descends rapidly and winds between the hills, not high but steep, and of beautiful forms. We saw many ruined castles standing on the edges of the edges of the cliffs, surrounded by black woods, high and inaccessible. This part of the Rhine, indeed, presents a singularly variegated landscape. In one spot, you view the rugged hills, ruined castles overlooking tremendous precipices. I'm having trouble with that. That word's not working today. With the dark Rhine rushing beneath, and on the sudden turn of promontory, flourishing vineyards with green sloping banks and meandering river and populous towns occupy the scene. We traveled at the time of the vintage and heard the song of the laborers as we glided down the stream. Even I, depressed in mind, and my spirits continually agitated by gloomy feelings, even I was pleased. I lay at the bottom of the boat, and as I gazed on the cloudless blue sky, I seemed to drink in a tranquility to which I had long been a stranger. And if these were my sensations, who can describe those of Henry? He felt as if he had been transported to fairyland and enjoyed a happiness seldom tasted by man. I have seen, he said, the most beautiful scenes of my own country. I have visited the lakes of Lucerne and Uri, where the snowy mountains descend almost perpendicularly to the water, casting black and impenetrable shades, which would cause a gloomy and mournful appearance were it not for the most verdant islands that relieve the eye by their gay appearance. I've seen this lake agitated by a tempest when the wind tore up the whirlwinds of water and gave you an idea of what the water spout must be on the great ocean. And the waves dashed with fury the base of the mountain, where the priest and his mistress were overwhelmed by an avalanche, and where their dying voices were still said to be heard amid the pauses of the wind. I have seen the mountains of La Valais and the Pays de Vaud, but this country, Victor, pleases me more than all those wonders. The mountains of Switzerland are more majestic and strange, but there is a charm in the banks of this divine river that I never before saw equaled. Look at that castle which overhangs over there, and that also on the island, almost concealed amongst the foliage of those lovely trees. And now, that group of laborers coming from among their vines, and that village half hidden in the recesses of the mountain. Oh, surely the spirit of their inhabitants and guards this place has a soul more in harmony with man than those who pile the glacier or retire to the inaccessible peaks of the mountains of our own country. Clerval, beloved friend, even now it delights me to record your words and to dwell on the praise of which you are so eminently deserving. He was a being formed in the very poetry of nature. His wild and enthusiastic imagination was chastened by the sensibility of his heart. His soul overflowed with ardent affections, and his friendship was that of devotion and wondrous nature that the worldly-minded teach us to look for only in the imagination. But even human sympathies were not sufficient to satisfy his eager mind. The scenery of external nature, which others regard only with admiration, he loved with ardor. The sounding cataract haunted him like a passion. The tall rock, the mountains, and the deep and gloomy wood, their colors and their forms were then to him an appetite, a feeling, and a love that had no need of a remoter charm, but thought supplied or any interest unborrowed from the eye. Wordsworth, Tintern Abbey. And where does he now exist? In this gentle and lovely being lost forever? Has this mind so replete with ideas, imaginations, fanciful and magnificent, which formed a world whose existence depended on the life of its creator, has its mind perished? Does it not only exist in my memory? No. It is not thus. Your form, so divinely wrought and beaming with beauty, has decayed, but your spirit still visits and consoles your unhappy friend. Pardon this gush of sorrow. These ineffectual words are but a slight tribute to the unexampled worth of Henry. but they soothed my heart, overflowing with the anguish with which his remembrance creates. I will proceed with my tale. Beyond Cologne, we descended to the plains of Holland, and we resolved to post the remainder of our way, for the wind was contrary to the stream of the river. It was too gentle to aid us, and the stream of the river was too gentle to aid us. Our journey here lost the interest arising from beautiful scenery, but we arrived in a few days at Rotterdam, whence we proceeded by sea to England. It was on a clear morning in the latter days of December that I first saw the white cliffs of Brittany. The banks of the Thames presented a new scene. They were flat but fertile, and almost every town was marked by the remembrance of some story. We saw Tilbury Fort and remembered the Spanish Armada, Gravesend, Woolwich, and Greenwich, places which I had heard of even in my country. At length, we saw the numerous steeples of London, St. Paul's towering above all, and the tower, which is famed in English history. Okay, guys, that's it for today. We made it. 3 chapters. Okay, well, I'll be back reading this. We will continue this book on Sunday, next Sunday. Also, we're going to have kind of like an every other day thing going on this week. I will be off tomorrow. And with my internet situation the way it is, I can't put any best ofs up or anything like that. So we'll have an off day tomorrow. Tuesday, I'll be live. Wednesday, I'll be off. Thursday, I'll be live again. And then Friday, I will be here with Nancy Matz and at noon with Anna Maria Manalo. So there's 2 shows on Friday for you guys to look out for. So that's what's happening. And I think we're going to be switching over to from StreamYard to Restream probably Tuesday or Wednesday. And that switchover is going to occur. And then hopefully my internet's in here. You know, I hope. Nothing ever works the way I plan, but hopefully the internet's in here. If you guys are on TikTok, come over tonight, 9:30 p.m. Pacific, right between 9:30 and 9:45. I will be doing 3 card readings tonight, so come on over and join the fun. See what's going on with your past, present, and future. Okay, guys, I'm taking off right now, and I hope to see you tonight. Otherwise, I'll see you Tuesday. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend, and rest up for work tomorrow, whatever it is you have. Sacramento, everything's cooling down. We're in our fall weather, so it's really, really, really cool. Okay? Well, I will see you guys, and let me cue this thing up. Give me a second to cue it. Cue that end up, and I will see you guys, and thank you guys for coming tonight. I appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day.